In every age, God raises people up to speak the truth to the world in a way that is currently relevant. Though our opinions should not be held with the same esteem as the biblical canon, we still carry the hope of Christ to the world. Our society has forgotten what it means to follow Christ. The bright lights of truth seekers are barely visible in the dim twilight of a post-Judeo-Christian society. We all see the darkness coming. All we can hope is to share the light that He has entrusted to us. This is Modern Apocrypha. Hey, I'm Jared.
And I'm Greg.
And this is Modern Apocrypha.
Welcome.
So, I wanted to talk about church, Christianity, the church, how we deal with a lot of the things that we run into as Christians comes from a tradition or is influenced by this quote Christian tradition that isn't actually Christian in a lot of ways. And here's what I mean by that. Let's actually back up just a little and go to context. First off, this is going to require a you will know them by their fruit approach to it. Sort of a you have to understand the doctrines and the beliefs and the practices and everything else by whether it has borne good fruit and whether it's accomplishing what it's supposed to accomplish. And in a lot of ways, modern Christianity doesn't, and it doesn't really map to what Christianity used to be. So right now I'm pulling on a book that I have been listening my way through, Pagan Christianity by Frank Viola. It's a book that I think basically anybody who considers themselves a follower of Christ in the modern era should probably read, because it gives you a good understanding of the history of the church and of where our practices as Christians came from. So the question that I want to pose, and this is both to my listeners and to you if you care to answer it as we go on, Greg, is this. We have two different sort of ways to think about Christianity. One is that if you have the right beliefs, then that puts you in the right place as a Christian. And the other is that if your life shows the right results, then that is a good indication that you're in the right place as a Christian. And I kind of made it a trick question.
The ends justifies the means as a doctrine that people follow?
No, that by their fruits you will know them. Jesus said it, man. He said that by their fruits you will know them. A good tree cannot bear bad fruit, a bad tree cannot bear good fruit.
There's a very old Greek philosopher argument that boils down to who gets to pick what's good, who gets to pick what's true, who gets to pick what's fruit.
So, right, but in this case, that's pretty easy, because if you judge it by the fruit that that Christ asked for, and you say the people who consider themselves Christ followers, are they bearing that fruit? And you ask that question, then that would be probably the best way to answer, right? Because that means you're being true to what you say you believe in.
You and I can make an agreement on that, and it's easy enough to get any number of individuals to come to an agreement on that. But once you take it outside of humans and you put it in systems, then you get something like the Catholic Church versus the Protestant Church, and how many numbers do we have? And it's not about human beings anymore. And then I think that the same people.
Well, and I guess what I'm asking, and what I always ask when I ask people to make judgments, is you yourself go out and look at the world and see if what I'm saying rings true to you. And if so, then that's great. And maybe you've learned something useful. And if not, well, then obviously, according to what you see, I'm not correct. So I'm not asking everybody to agree with me. I'm asking people to look at things from a perspective they're not used to. a lot of times as Christians, we seem to ask ourselves if what we believe is correct. Okay, do I believe the right things? Is my doctrine correct? That's 95 to 99% of the disagreements in Christian circles are, is my belief about this thing true? And I've been observing that God doesn't seem to place a lot of weight on whether the things we believe are all true. Instead, what he tends to place a lot of weight on is, are the things that we're doing according to what he wants us to do? That seems to be the standard that Jesus set in Scripture. And I can quote it if you want. It's, those who do the things that I tell you to do are those who love me. If you love me, do what I tell you to do. That's what he says over and over again. He doesn't say, if you believe the right things, then I love you or you love me. It's, if you do the things I tell you to do, then that shows that you love me. Jesus says it.
No, I get that. And I understand that if I'm in fellowship with Christ and Christ tells me to do something, I should do so. But I also argue that the Pope telling me to do something is not Christ telling me to do something.
Right. And so now let's pull in. With that said, with that sort of framework to look at, we need to ask, what are the practices of Christianity today? Well, one of the central practices of Christianity today is going to church, right? That's a central thing that most Christians do, whether it's a temple or a cathedral or a church or building or whatever. That's what a lot of, quote, Christians do.
I would argue that keep the Sabbath is not go to church on Sunday, because going to church on Sunday still allows you to fully immerse yourself in your social media on your phone and not be...
Do not forsake the gathering of the saints.
Right. So you can still cheat and eat, right? So just the act itself is not...
Do not forsake the gathering of the saints. That's a command from Scripture, where we are not to stop getting together with brothers and sisters. Okay. And here's the thing where this Pagan Christianity book has really been helping me to put things in the proper perspective. If you look at the way things were done in the first century church, in the very early church, under Jesus's apostles, those who actually learned from him, did you know there weren't sermons by preachers?
I did not.
That was not a thing. It was not a thing. That came in through Greek oratory. And if you look at the course in seminary called homiletics, homiletics is actually using the techniques of the Greek sophists, who were very powerful speakers, to teach you how to emotionally manipulate your audience into listening to what you have to say. So that's where homiletics, creating homilies, creating sermons, that's where that practice came from. The sermons in the New Testament were of a different sort of character than what you would expect to find in any church I can think of. And the way the early church body gathered, they didn't have a leader in these churches. Instead, they expected Jesus Christ himself to lead them as they gathered. And he did. And they didn't have a head dude. They didn't have a head honcho in charge of each church. That wasn't the way it worked. Instead, it was a gathering together of the saints for the purposes of ministering to each other and of bringing Christ into their own lives and the lives of the people around them by communal worship. That was what they did. So as an example, you might have somebody, and we see it over and over again in how Paul, sorry, I'm digressing a little bit here, but we see it over and over again in how Paul says to prepare for the church gathering. He says, everybody, make sure you have something, you know, think of things that you might say, think of things that, you know, spiritual songs that you might sing, think of, you know, whatever it is, because everybody has a place to contribute and everybody needs to be ready if the Spirit leads them to contribute the thing that the Spirit's been putting on their heart. That's important to do. And so what we see in, quote, church, whether it's Catholic or any, basically any denomination of Protestantism you can think of, there are a few that aren't even really considered denominations where this isn't true. And if you find a house church that's a good one, you'll find that it kind of works this way, where people don't, you don't have a leader. You certainly don't have somebody who's paid to be a minister. Instead, you have the people of God gathering together and allowing Jesus to lead them. But in almost every formal church denomination, you have this thing where somebody is the head of the church. They get up and they preach a sermon or give a message or whatever on Sunday. And you have a few worship songs that are, you know, basically a performance put on often, or in smaller churches, maybe it's not, but in general, a performance that's put on by a group that puts the audience in the position of a spectator who is watching. And you can break down the things we do in church into categories, and you can look at those things one by one and look at where they come from.
Have you been in many congregations where the singing was not cooperative? I've not been told to be
okay. Okay, so yes, well, that's mostly a Catholic thing. Most Protestant churches, that you're expected to take part in the singing, but the people who are leading the singing are a generally.
Is that why they look at me funny if I'm ever in Catholic Mass and I sing along? Am I not supposed to?
You know what? I'm not familiar enough with Catholic services to give
you a correct answer. My great-grandmother was Catholic. I've been in Catholic Masses before. I'm fairly irreverent because I'm direct contact. So the guy in the front with the funny hat on is got a funny hat on. They got some good music. I can't deny it. They got some beautiful cathedrals and some beautiful music. I want to participate sometimes.
Anyway, the point is whether or not you're participating or being, you know, a recipient, the idea is that you're kind of the audience and you may join in, but you are not the one who is, you know, offering that song to the group to be sung. That's the responsibility of a worship leader. That's not your responsibility. You don't get to decide what song is sung. That's the worship leader's responsibility.
It feels like a very corporate disconnect, because typically if you had everybody in a normal social interaction, you could not have anything terrible show up because you would be ostracized from your group. And when you've got a giant mega church, somebody could throw out something horrible just to defame you, and it's likely because you're huge. So,
and mega churches are not really what the Bible prescribes or describes in either case. It's more a case of groups of Christians who gather individually in each other's homes to have small group sessions as your weekend thing, where you may have a few families, but you're not going to have 1,000 people in one gathering. That's going to be split up into many groups across the city, and you'll get cross-pollination. You'll get people visiting different groups and whatever, but you're not going to get this thing, this mega church thing. That's not a thing in the way Christianity is intended to be.
I believe that maybe I'm just off my rocker here, but do we not have some mega churches that are on the scale of some large cities of biblical times, population-wise?
You know, man, I don't know exactly what the scales are on those things. I don't pay much attention. I have lived outside of the church system for most of my life, to the point where I'm almost an outsider looking in who understands what they're supposed to be better than most of the churchgoers do, because I have yearned for a proper church body my whole life. And every church I visit basically follows the same pattern. You get one dude who gets up to give a message. Occasionally you have a visiting somebody instead. You have a place where they ask you to give them money. You have a few songs that are picked by a worship leader. You have a few minutes to meet and greet. You may have a little bit of video presentation or something. And that's pretty much the whole church service instead of being what the New Testament describes as a church service, where everybody is contributing this or that. People share what went on with them during the week and what God was showing them, or, you know, you go through and God, Jesus himself, leads the people in what they are offering and what they do. And you end up with this thing that is, should not be possible by human standards, but by golly, it is what was instituted by the Lord. And I have yet to find one of those for myself, to be perfectly honest with you. I don't attend that sort of gathering. What we go to is we go to a small community church that has a service that my kids get to have friends there, and there's some social interaction and some fellowship, and they do have some worship, and that's occasionally okay. I've never had it rise to a level of what I get when I'm sitting alone in my chair and I worship the Lord, or with my family in the evenings on Sunday, we'll do that. But the point is, it's more of a social club than it is a church body in, or church family in most ways, because it doesn't function the way it's supposed to function. And as Frank Viola lays it out in the book Pagan Christianity, he says he looks at each practice, whether it's having a building to gather in instead of doing it in believers' homes, or the sermon, which is not a that's a pagan thing that was adopted by early Christianity, or the whole paid worship service sort of performance thing that we kind of join in on around the edges, or whatever it is. The question is this something that God is using to bring good fruit in the lives of the people? And I would say that it's, in general, it's not. And the proof of that comes in the places where Jesus says, these are the things that will happen around people who follow me. He says, and these signs will follow them, that there will be healing, that there will be casting out of demons, that there will be, you know, serious signs of the Holy Spirit will follow the people who are doing the things that God, that puts them in God's church. And we don't have that in our churches today across America, especially most of the West. What it has become instead is a religious observance thing. And so what I'm contrasting here is the power of Jesus brought into the individual's life to heal them from physical things to spiritual to relational in all the ways that we need it. That is what is intended. And I contrast that with, do people have the right beliefs? And, you know, recently we were talking about how divisive it gets on social media and how 90-some% of the interactions between Christians on social media are telling each other that they're going to go to hell because they believe the wrong thing. That's what I see on Twitter all the time, enough to make me crazy.
Enough to make you crazy, yeah.
And the reality is, that's not healthy. That's not right. Our eyes are on the wrong things. When you gorge yourself on the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, and you make sure to believe the right things and get things right and make sure that you're in the right place with your system of beliefs, that is not showing Christianity. That is not showing the fruit of Christianity. And this is something I've struggled with my whole life, because people ask me, well, what do you think is actually wrong with the church? And I guess if I could sum it up, you know, going through the conversation that we've had here so far, I would say the problem that I have with the church is that it doesn't act like the church. Instead, it's doing this other set of things that it was never supposed to do, that are actually pulled from pagan practices from the early centuries. That's where a lot of our church practices originate. There's no description of them in the New Testament. There's no there's no indication that that's what we should be doing. Instead, it's a case of we just do it because that's our tradition. And you will be more derided and more hated for pointing out how people's traditions are evil than just about anything else. And that's what I'm seeing going on, is people trying to pick on each other for being in the wrong place doctrinally. But even the people who I find to be the most perfect doctrinally generally lack the power of God in their actions and interactions with the people around them. And so I when I look at this, I am left with a really serious, I'm grieved. In my spirit, I'm grieved because we are in a bad place as a nation, as Christians, as what, however you want to break it up. We've got this huge problem. And I kind of know what the solution should look like, but I don't know how to get there because it isn't just me. You know, for years before I started attending a church, I tried to get people to join me and my family for worship on a regular basis, and it never happened. It literally never happened, which makes me think that it wasn't time, that God didn't, you know, it wasn't the proper time for this to go. But by the same token, I'm still left searching. And so the place I'm coming back to myself is that if I take scripture seriously, and I feel I have to, then I expect that the things that he said to do will be the things that a proper church does and that I will be a part of in that context. And the more I have fellowship, which I've started to get more over the past few years, as you know, the more that's true, the more my life starts to come in line with the standards that I find to be appropriate for a Christian. And so it is just the fruit of a properly lived life. It's not something that I'm striving for.
Okay. So it is doing the doctrinal thing of the true church does give you the fruit that you're
doing the doctrinal thing. The doctrine is proper belief system.
But where you might attend a church, the idea is engage in fellowship, right? If you just show up and you're quiet, then you're not engaging, you're not there, right?
True, but part of church is also ministering to other people and being ministered to. It's like when I know that you're struggling with something and we have fellowship, I try to meet you where I know you're struggling. I try to, you know, I try to minister to you, and I try to let God speak to you through me as best I'm able. And sometimes that works great. Sometimes it's just me talking, but that's just, you know, that's because I'm not good at any of this. I'm just doing my best. There's a big difference. But
right, the point but it still is, does take, I don't know how to put this without coming across detrimental, and I don't mean it. I mean it as a compliment of sorts, that you are a leader by trade, by personality. You cannot not be a leader. Right. Mm. But in fellowship, it's not about a pinnacle. There is no
leader. Right. Well, and
in that place, you shine in a way that I wouldn't expect of you. I wouldn't expect you to be able to swallow yourself in that place. And yet you're great at it.
You know, God makes us each to fulfill a number of different roles. And when it comes to being part of the body, none of us are to be the leader. Christ is the leader. He is our leader. And so it is my joy to follow him and to offer what I have to my brothers and my sisters and the people around me. That is a joy to me. I have these other venues where I can be a leader, and that's great. And that's good too, because it gives me that opportunity, but it isn't always what you aren't always supposed to be doing all the things. There's a context for each thing. Right.
Right.
And well, usually, and let me say this, usually the people who are good leaders wind up not being leaders in the church, in the context of the fellowship. It's the people who are generally not leaders who are called to step up and do that, because in our weakness, he is made strong. His strength is shown by perfection in the ways that we are weak. So when it comes to the things that I'm not good at, he shows himself as being strong by calling me into those areas as well to serve other people. And that's a good thing, and I'm open to that, even though it makes me incredibly vulnerable, right? Because it's me not showing my strengths, it's me showing my weaknesses, and God acts through those to be strong, and I'm for that.
Are we at a break point, or can I go into a tangential
Please
point?
Go into something else. We've got a couple of minutes.
Okay, so something that on the doctrinal side of things, what you can do and can't do, I've heard it said before that you shouldn't affix a cross to a tree and basically you shouldn't have a Christmas tree. But at the same time, if I'm not attributing that to my faith and it's just an American culture thing, if it's not spiritual for me to give a Valentine's Day card, why must it be spiritual for me to enjoy my Christmas tree? You can enjoy the turn of the seasons without saying that that's the same thing.
Right. And you know, this hits a hugely important point, and I think that is something to this effect, that all things in this world belong to God, and that when we do things in this world, we're using God's world. If we're his children and we're operating in accordance with his will, we can do all kinds of things. It doesn't matter what tradition it comes from. What we must have, though, is we must have the correct environment to feed us, which means as Christians, we need to be able to minister to others as we are ministered to ourselves. We need as much to be an active part of the body as we do to be you know, to have other people providing things for us. We have to be integral. And if our churches aren't providing that, then it stunts people's growth. And so when it comes to practical, how do I do this, you know, advice or application of what we're doing, we all have to be part of that, doing it every day to be healthy Christian people. And when you find people in a church who've been going to church for 30 years and they're still baby Christians because, yeah, maybe they believe the right things in some areas, but they're not actually actively showing Christ to the people around them in the world, that indicates that the institution that they come from is damaged. That's a pretty good place to take a break.
That's a pretty good place to take a break, yeah. I'm going to think about that while we're on break.
All right. We'll be back in a minute.
Back in a minute, guys.
Hey, everybody. The release for Bright Star is less than a week away, and I just want everybody to know how much I appreciate the support I've gotten for this book. It has left me humbled and more than appreciative. Right now, I'm in the process of trying to take my audience from a sort of a friends and family group to something a little wider. And as part of that process, I've started a Kickstarter. It doesn't have a real high goal. It's about $200, but the Kickstarter's for an anthology to sit between Bright Star and The Veil of Mysteries, which is what I've tentatively titled the second book in the Epimyth. If you're interested in my work in Bright Star, please head over to e6universe.com, the website. The Kickstarter is the very first article there. Click through, and I would love to have I'd love to hit some of the stretch goals on this. I'm not sure it'll happen, but I would love to. Either way, I'm looking forward to finishing the anthology. I have one more story to write minimum, and that is a story about whatever character people are most interested in the book. So if you've read Bright Star and you'd like to suggest a character to write a short story about, please email me. It's Jared@Energemetra6 or Jared@E6Universe.com. Either one will work. And let me know, whose backstory would you like to hear?
I'd like to take a moment to thank all the people enjoying Modern Apocrypha. As many of you have seen, I'm an avid coffee drinker, and I've been drinking North Arrow Coffee for a couple of pounds now. You can find North Arrow Coffee at northarrowcoffee.co, all one word, where they list coffee of the month and how green coffee is handled. I've been enjoying some of the number 4 Honduras and some of the number 10 Peru, available at northarrow.co. If you'd like to help support us even more, you can use discount code E6 for 10% off your coffee order today. Thank you.
And we're back.
Welcome back, everyone. So we're on the book topic and generally the pagan Christianity.
Yeah, that was the book. Though, to me, the point wasn't so much the book itself as the what is wrong with the church as a whole, and why do we or how do we. You know, how does it work itself out in society so that we see the effects of that? And I think what I would say is that a lot of times when people ask me specifically what's wrong with any given church, I look at it and I go, you know, if you want me to get to specifics, we're going to be here for a year because none of this stuff is exactly what's said in the New Testament, but we're also not told not to do anything specific. We have freedom to do whatever we choose, but we know that as Christians, we need certain things to be healthy. And the way church is done right now doesn't provide those things to us, right?
Well, certainly the way that church is run right now, there's nothing to stop the worst of people from having the highest places there. So,
well, and having high places in church at all, having high ranks is not something that was ever Christian. That is of the enemy, no question.
Let me throw this out there because it strikes me as a Christian concept, but perhaps I'm overthinking it. But if you were to think about going to work, work is generally good until you're in your 80th hour of your 80th year and you've never seen your fourth child because you've been at work so much. There seems to be how you do things, everything, how you do everything, not mechanistically how to put something together, but how to look at everything is embedded in the conversation, the fellowship with your church, with your trusted group.
Well, that's what we would, where we talk about the kingdom of heaven, right? When Jesus said the kingdom of heaven is at hand, he was talking about a different way of taking in the world and dealing with the world than anybody was used to. That was sort of the point of the kingdom of heaven. It was never to be, the kingdom of God is sort of a different thing. It's like Jesus is to be the ruler, but the kingdom of heaven and those who enter into it are those who take the world in a particular way that is different from the way other people do. That's what he was talking about, isn't it?
I think so. I would agree with that thought. That is how I feel about that topic.
That's what I think too. And so that speaks to what you're saying in that even the way we go about doing church, there are things that need to be a part of it. You know, church being the gathering together of believers. One, Jesus needs to be the head of the service. He needs to be the one who guides and directs what goes on. That's one. Two, every person needs to be able to minister and be ministered to in this setting, in particular as whatever their calling is. But you need to not have a human trying to take charge of or command of the proceedings. You need to not have, in general at least, you need to not have a person getting up to talk the whole time, which stops everybody else from having input. You need to not have someone who is determining how all the things go other than the Lord, whether it's songs or, you know, whatever.
We do have a natural tendency as the human animal outside of spirituality to do a rhythm, right? If you've sat somewhere the first day of class, you're likely to sit there forever. So if you've done mass in a way where songs happen after the first prayer before, right, and you have this songs happen, that's where songs end up happening. And that's not wrong, but you have to allow for it to not happen. If it's not evil to go away from it.
Well, and it is evil to not make it so that the people in the church get what they're supposed to have out of the gathering. And I don't know of a formal church organization where people get what they're supposed to get out of the gathering in a New Testament context, which means that as a group, we Christians generally don't function the way we ought to function.
We had a note that was sort of one of the notes for this episode's title. What was it? The gospel. What does the gospel say, and what does it lead us to? How does it lead us to live?
Yeah. Okay. So
there's.
That is sort of what we've been talking about. It's just putting it in other words. So what is the gospel? The gospel is the news that Jesus Christ has died for our sins and risen from the dead, and that if we believe in and follow him, we will have everlasting life. And that begins now today while we're alive. It doesn't begin some other day after we're resurrected. That everlasting life starts now, and that life, that abundant life that we're supposed to have, doesn't just involve all of the things that you would normally have outside of that. There are other blessings that come in as well as a part of that. And so how do we get those? Well, some of the things that are required are to actually make Jesus the Lord of your life, to say, Lord, I give you dominion over my life and my choices. Please lead me where you will. And he doesn't always do that, but if we have submitted that to him, then when it comes to the important stuff that where we need to change something or do something particular, he will give us what we're supposed to have. He will take that lead where we need it. And that's part of it. And then when we live out of that, when every part of our life flows out of that, then those things that he said, these signs will follow those who believe. Those signs will follow you because that's just a part of your life now. You will have a river of living water that flows out of you to touch everyone around you because that's part of what it is to be a Christian. And if we don't have that, that means that we need to be looking for and asking for more. And I have been doing that for many years, and I'm not where I want to be, but man, I'm in a much better place than I was 5 years ago, like night and day better. So.
Well, and what a better proof of work than people that have known you for the full time, right? And it's, you know, it's not like it's fake. It's not like it's worked for, or that's not exactly, it's not like it's acted.
Right. It isn't something that you're striving to live into. It's flowing out of what has happened to you and what you have become.
That seems to be the way that it appears, right? Yeah, when you're doing it faithfully.
Is there anything more you want to talk about here, or can I turn the topic a little bit and talk about something else?
I think we can turn the topic a little bit.
Okay, so here's when I talk about Christian nationalism, which we did in a previous episode, and I have a problem with the way they approach things. Here's the way it looks to me. And this is just me sitting here, who does not have an attachment to a particular denomination, has never really liked organized church because it doesn't bear the fruits that it claims that it should. Here's what I see. I see people who claim Christ's name, but operate without his power, because a lot of the people who are very much for this Christian nationalism thing are also cessationists. And what cessationism is they believe that the gifts of the Holy Spirit cease to function after the times of the apostles and are not present in our lives today. This is a huge percentage of people who call themselves Christians who believe that these gifts have ceased to function, okay? And so what they do is they're functionally atheists. They claim to believe in God, but their lives don't show the power of God, that they don't have healings following them. They don't have the signs that Christ specifically says will follow those who believe. And then you've got this thing where they're trying to put Christian morals and Christian leadership in positions of power in the secular world. You say?
I was just filling in because I could see that you weren't there. Just that I won't give up my language. I am both Christian and I love my country, so that makes me Christian nationalist. I just don't mean any harm in that, and I don't mean what they mean. I can't believe that they are saying that's what they are when they're so far away from the meaning that I am.
Loving. Well, and the reality is that as Christians, when we go into government, because some Christians have a place to have a job in government, right? We will act out of what we believe, and that's great. But where it becomes a problem is when you, as a Christian who claims Christ, but does not show the power of Christ in what you believe and in what you live, and then you go out and you claim that you need to bring your influence into the secular world on purpose, what you're doing is just totally twisted and sideways from what the Bible tells us to do. But it's also, you're coming from a place where you haven't even got the basic fruits of what the Bible says you should have if you're a Christian. And you shouldn't be doing what you're doing if that's true, because it demonstrates that you don't actually have Christ. He said, these signs will follow those who believe. If you take the Bible seriously, you have to take that seriously. If you don't, then you have made yourself a heretic in a sense. So what I have a problem with is basically that whole sort of flow. And a lot of these people are the ones who spend a huge amount of time trying to make sure that their doctrine is correct, and then their lives don't show that they have contact with Christ, even in how they relate to other people. It's like, these are the people who spend a lot of time condemning others or attacking others for not being holy.
Could enough. I get you to go into a specific use case?
Yeah.
I'm terrible with names. I apologize, everyone. The ex-vice president of Trump is a religious person in government.
Okay.
What was the name you said?
Mike Pence.
Mike Pence is a religious, he purports religion and is in government.
Yeah.
A critique of that, positive or negative in what you're saying for people. That character study.
Of what he does and how he does it?
And being a Christian in a place, not,
you know,
a Christian of a position.
There are things that I find really admirable about how he comported himself, like the rule where he would not have dinner with female colleagues without his wife or whatever, that he doesn't put himself in a position where he can compromise himself with some other woman who isn't his wife. I find that to be admirable, because Even if you don't think that he should be doing that, he at least knows his limits, and he is trying to live up to the most important vow he ever made in his life, the one to stay true to his wife. And if that means that other things about his life have to suffer, that's a sacrifice he's willing to make. And to me, that's actually good that he's willing to do that. That's a great thing. On the other hand, what I'm not sure of is, and I don't know Mike Pence personally, and I don't know all that much about his political career, but I can tell you that there is nothing about the national political stage that I saw him change in a positive way. And so maybe he did his job in an administrative sense, and what he did through it was positive. But it isn't like he made any great changes or did anything amazing while he was there. And well, I don't know how he would have.
I'm going to beat you up on that. I think that he did better than the average human being for the level of availability of filth in that town. He did not partake, it seems, of a vast majority of it. And his claim to fame is Space Force. That's not Trump. That's Pence.
Interesting. Well, okay. So what I would say is, you know, I gave him credit for the admirable things that I think he did, and staying out of the filth, as far as we know, is probably one of them.
Something that you say about being a Christian, and some people don't put it on Western civilization, but I do, is that when you do a job, you do your perspective of the best job of that thing that you can.
If you're an artist, you're the best. Do everything as unto the Lord.
Right. You want to do a good job. You're not just, you know, half button it.
Yeah, no, that's right. And like, I don't see anything that says to me that he didn't.
I feel like that he did not have the social graces to get through the media, but for the job that he did, given the job description he was given, he did a good job.
And that's what you get. And I don't have any argument with that. I've never seen anything to contradict that. I know that there are a lot of people who are pro-Trump who have a huge issue with him certifying the vote when he wasn't certain it was something. But the reality is that had never not been done before. So it's like what he did was sort of what every other vice president ever in the United States has always done every time. And I have a hard time criticizing him for that, specifically because it would have set a precedent for him to not do what he did. And that's a big deal. And so I'm not sure he did wrong.
That statement with somebody under a Trump banner. I'm under Christ's banner. Sorry, I'm not under.
Right. Well, and I'm with you on this. I'm not under Trump's banner. I'll say that Trump did better things in the presidency than any other president in my lifetime. But that's a low bar. That's like saying I jumped the hurdle and it was 2 inches high. Great frickin' job, dude. Sure. You still didn't accomplish anything useful. So whatever.
Yeah. On the business financial side of our economic red tape bureaucracy side, some things happened, but on the spiritual side, not much.
And the red tape bureaucracy side, even there, anything that he accomplished was unaccomplished within a few months of him leaving office.
No, they just tried to say it's Biden's, even though it's still Trump's.
No. Everything he did that was good was undone within a few months of him leaving office by Biden.
Is there still a U.S. embassy in Jerusalem?
Fair enough. Okay, you got the one. On the other hand, where that particular thing is going is a whole other can of worms, and we ought to talk about it sometime. But man, the whole is Trump the Antichrist thing is a funny kettle of fish to dig into. That one is funky as heck. I don't want to talk about it now because it's very weird, and we can't do it justice with this episode. But
right.
Okay, so what more do we feel like is important to hit here?
I think that's a good spot on the difference between the dogma of any organization and the spirit of any organization. I don't believe the spirit of a hospital is to hurt people. You just have to watch that your doctrines don't end up getting you there, right?
Yeah, sure. Well, and the spirit of things can change as people do them. You know, it's like the whole, the government's, the spirit in which a safety net is offered to people does not end up becoming a good thing in the end, and anymore, it's just a bureaucratic program that makes the government more powerful. So I don't know. Either way, though, the one thing I would like to hit before we finish the episode is something along these lines, that when Jesus was talking about leading, he led by example every time, which means his life and what he did exemplified what he wanted other people to do. So when you look at things like the Samaritan woman that he met on his travels, she says to him, "Lord, why won't you listen to me?" He says, "I was sent to the lost sheep of the tribe of Israel." And she says, "Yeah, but even the dogs take the crumbs under the master's table." And Jesus had pity on her. So even though his mission was not to help the Samaritans, he took the time to take care of the people who came to him or who were in his path who needed him, regardless of who they were or where they came from or anything about them. And that's our responsibility as well. We are to take care of the people who are put in our path who need us to take care of them. That's part of our responsibility. He did that by example. You go down the line, and everything he wanted other people to do, he did it. The only time he leveraged violence in his life that we know of was in his zeal for not having the money changers in the temple, in his zeal for the Father's house, which is basically, it's kind of amazing, actually, where we see him being willing to be violent. That's kind of amazing. It was there. It wasn't when he was being taken away to be killed. He did not defend himself. It was not in any number of other contexts where he got in trouble. Instead, he just kind of walked away from most of those situations where he was going to be in trouble, and people were mad at him, but he left. So that's sort of the non-violence example for Christians, is just being sure that where we leverage our responsibility for violence is very, very limited. But in general, the example he gave in almost every instance is something we're to follow. And when you find people who aren't following that example, who aren't living that way, beware. That's not showing good fruit, right? But by the same token, we're all human, and other than him, none of us is perfect.
Right. So we're all going to have our areas that we're still working on.
Well, and
I think that you'll get, as you age, you'll get to a point where you'll find those people that are working through it and those people that have put up a wall and are not. And if they're not working on it, then they've put that demon in a place that they're going to live with forever as opposed to fight forever, then you'll notice.
Yeah. And you know, for my case, I'm certainly still working on it, and I will be until the day I die, God willing. I am not okay with living with the things about myself that aren't good. I'm not okay just being comfortable with them, but I also have them.
Right.
And that doesn't make me a hypocrite. It just makes me somebody who aspires to be better than I am. And that's true of any of us, whether we're Christian or not. I would just say that we need to make sure that, number one, we get our house in order. If we are Christians, are we taking seriously what we consider to be
I'd like to pause on this. It's often said, and therefore often overlooked, get your house in order. What is your house?
Okay.
In your chest, in your heart, in your mind, in your body, your temple, your house.
Yeah.
It's not your physical house. It's not you telling someone else what to do. It's your house.
Right. That is the very first thing. Get your house in order. Get yourself in order.
That is sort of a figurative statement about your state of mind and your physical body. And right. It is not about tearing up your kids because you're not yet ready to confront them. I mean, a horrible story. I'm not picking on this person, but because I don't know them. But walking through a parking lot, saw a parent full on punch a kid in the stomach, and my mother-in-law went and had words. You know, what are you doing? That baby could not understand that communication. Right? So someone not making sure that they're viewing the world right before taking it out in their house.
Right. Well, and I mean, that's
so when that you say house,
a fairly extreme example, but you're right. Get yourself in order, and that will flow out into the people around you. But if you're a Christian, make sure that you're living up to the standard that you claim. Right? Don't, if you claim to be a Christian, those signs should be following you before you think that you're in a good place. And before you think that you should go spreading your influence to other areas, make sure that what you're doing in general is in a reasonable place, and that you're not totally lacking in the fruits of what being a Christian is supposed to be.
Certainly, that's take important. Everything. Yeah, take everything with the availability of input, but also, you know, don't hold it inside and not ask. Right, the part of the fellowship is I present this idea, I feel this, I see this. Am I seeing craziness? Am I feeling it wrong? You know, there's certainly an openness, but if you don't initially speak up, then no one can hear you here. And Jesus will always hear you. But
right. Yeah, and if I'm understanding what you're getting at, I agree. I think
so. Getting to a point where you're open enough to address concerns and what you see without saying I'm correct.
Right. Well, and even in areas where you think you are correct, not trying to bludgeon people with it, but just offering what you have as a useful contribution to the people around you. That is sort of the spirit in which a Christian offers things, is just trying to be useful and helpful to the people around you by offering what you have that's valuable.
And I think that, again, it's something you get as you get older. You know, we are so excited to be useful, so excited to be a participant, that we stick our foot in our mouths, especially as young men, for a good long time. But it is not something to give up on. It is something that as you build experience and build, I don't even know how to describe the knowledge that you'll gain.
Learning from failure, learning from not being good at something to help yourself become good at something is one of the key things that I had to, it was actually one of the life lessons that I had a heck of a time with. Sure. I agree.
So I guess that's my tidbit of input there is when we say get our house, we're talking about as close to home as you can possibly be. And no matter what, whenever you're bringing something forward, usually you won't say it's right. Everyone will say it's right.
Usually, though, there are the times when you have to stand alone against the crowd, too. That does happen.
It does happen. I don't think that if you stood against the crowd and looked at the fundamental about what you're arguing, that they could disagree. And if they will have fellowship with you, they will agree. And if they won't, they'll stone you.
That ends up being the case a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Well,
but they don't ever deny the truth.
I know I've found myself in the position of having rocks thrown at me now and then because I had something I offered that wasn't popular.
Plenty of that out there these days. And people will have trouble accepting a contrary view because there are plenty of people that are just contrary for the sake of it and not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and here's the other thing. You know, you and I, and actually this is something that's been itching at me for most of this episode. You and I, when we talk about these things, we state our beliefs pretty firmly. But most people who are listening to this need to understand that I do not reject people who disagree with me, even in the areas that really bother me. You know, I have people who I fellowship with regularly who believe that Jesus Christ is here ruling the nations with an iron rod. There are people I fellowship with regularly who believe that. And yeah, it bugs the crap out of me.
I'm in the boat that I'm not sure.
Well, I forgive you. But seriously, though, it bugs the crap out of me because it's obviously not true. But the reality is, it isn't going to stop me from being your friend, your brother, whatever, so long as you are more interested in having Christ as the Lord of your life and following him. I'm not going to be upset with you for being wrong about things.
Well, and that's part of my perspective on the, I'm not 1,000% sure. I'm not 100% sure on almost anything on purpose, because I must leave room for consideration. Nothing, I believe, would lead me to not invite you to God's grace, and nothing I would purport as my belief would encourage someone to stop someone from continuing to find their truth, right? The truth.
I think that's a great place to call it.
Right on. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, everyone. We'll see you again next time.